This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You are listening to Lucha Underground.
Hello and welcome again to Lucha Underground. My name is Travis. Again, Max is still away in Japan, but we are beyond thrilled to have with us here tonight a mainstay at the Place to Be Nation Network, various shows, including Titans of Wrestling and This Week in Wrestling. Pete, how are you?
Doing good, man. I appreciate you having me.
Oh, I appreciate you doing this. You have no idea. So we will get into it. Before we get into this episode, I wanted to talk about my wife and I made a trip down to Yakima, Washington, which it said is about 4.5 hours from on Google Maps from where we are located. Turns out to be about 5.5 when you add the border and Seattle. Seattle is always, I don't know if you've ever had to drive through Seattle, Pete, but it always slows you down no matter what time of day it is. So we got to the Yakima Valley Sun Dome. Holds about 8,000. I would guess there's maybe 800 to 1,000 people there. Still pretty loud, but it was really, you know, because it's such a big building, it was spread out, and, you know, nobody ever really kind of moved down onto the floor or anything. Everybody just kind of stayed where they were. And there was a lot of hype for this show. Had you heard anybody talking about it?
Yeah, well, Matt Farmer, who's like a yep. big-time historian, yep. Was talking about it. So that, I got interested in it. I'm like, yeah. Oh, cool. And then you saw the posters on Twitter mm-hmm. and then online. And, like Mysterio is going to work on top. I'm yeah. like, I think Phoenix was going to be there. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of other guys. I know Conan. So I thought it was gonna be when you were telling me you only drew that much, I'm kind of like dumbfounded about draw, especially in an 8,000 seat building.
I was a little surprised too. There was even I think was Farmer on Alvarez, like even pimping this thing. I'm pretty sure he was. I was expecting this to be. So right away we got there. Like we went straight. Because we got there, like they said, doors are at 6. I wanted to know if like that was going to be bell time right away, because they hadn't said anything other than that. But, you know, it took about until 6:45. And right away, you could tell the ring announcer had very little wrestling experience. He had a good voice, Spanish-speaking. But same thing with the timekeeper, you could tell as this match went on. For the first match, which he introduced, these are two, I guess, local guys, Ave Rex and Sonico. Have you heard of them?
No.
Against the American Guns, who we know well because they work here in ECCW in Vancouver a lot. They kind of go up and down the Pacific Northwest. And they're good. They're worth looking up. Ethan HD and Santiago. I can't remember the teammate. But they've had I've seen some really great work from them, and they were good in this match. It was a good opener. Oh, okay. I should mention now another ECCW talent, Carl Cunningham of the Cunninghams, who's also really good, was reffing this first match. That will become important later on in the evening. So it was a good opener. The luchas went over, which was fine, but they were testing out the lighting grid throughout. I should mention that that announcer, right away, you could tell he didn't have a lot of wrestling experience, because he announced both teams one right after the other. Like, here we go. And then the one team had their way down to the ring. And then there's just this long pause where the American Guns are like, are we going to get announced here or what? So it was already just kind of like from, again, like this was a hyped up show. It didn't feel tight, man. I know that they were shooting video there, right? So maybe that was so they could cut it together into something well, but right away, so as I said, they're testing out the lighting good throughout this thing.
Yeah, so that's really crazy, because you think they do it before them.
Yeah, yeah.
The show started.
Yeah. Anyway, so the next match was billed as Sue Young versus Jessica Havoc. Jessica Havoc did not make it. She was replaced by someone else from their town, La Avispa, and another woman, I'm not sure who it was. And so there's a new ref out there, but there's this long delay, and somebody gets on the mic, who I assume is involved, might have been the promoter, and says that the Washington State Athletic Commission was not allowing this referee to ref this match. And like he's what? Like, I don't know what's gonna happen if I make him, if I let him rap. Maybe they're gonna throw me in jail. Like, so he's almost kind of cutting like this kind of promo, getting heat. Well, I could tell it looked like there was some sort of official standing next to him there. So the ref
was this an angle or is this for real?
No, no, I didn't feel like it. If it was, it wasn't getting over because it didn't feed up to anything later. So the ref, wow. The ref leaves in like he left in a really nice fashion. He kind of exited Marty Jannetty style over the top rope. So that was nice. And then Carl Cunningham, the ref in the previous match slash normally a wrestler, had to come out and ref this match. And this match was a bit of a mess. It kind of went all over the place. Sue Young looked good. She does some nice character work. I don't know if you've seen her before.
I'm actually I've seen her before, and I'm actually going to a show on the 23rd of October with her working underneath on the card versus a gal named Angel Blue.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I mean, you'll see. She had some nice stuff, and then, like I said, really good character work. She stayed with it. She was, you know, committed, even for an arena that felt, you know, a little rather bare. Here's the other thing with the announcer. For the start of this match, for the first 2 or 3 minutes, probably until someone told him to stop, he was making kind of shitty, like, kind of sexist comments. Like, come on, ladies, get to it. Don't crack a nail kind of thing. And I'm like, what are they doing?
Jeez.
So, like I said, the match was had some okay stuff, but it was a bit of a mess because it went to the outside and chairs weren't cooperating, stuff like that. Anyways, so, but Jessica Havoc, a no-show. We already know that Del Rio backed out and was replaced by Hardy, which is fine. But when I bought these tickets, it was Del Rio against Mysterio at the start and Havoc versus Sue Young. And so that's technically two that didn't happen. I know card subject to change, whatever, but still, here we go. Next match was billed as MVP versus Sami Callihan. Apparently, Sami Callihan and Jessica Havoc are dating.
Couple.
A friend of mine was telling me this. So, Sami Callihan also no-showed. We get Kid Cash instead, who's okay.
Yeah, good worker.
Yeah, good worker. And it was an okay match. I'll tell you this. The main eventers worked really hard. MVP didn't work as hard as they did. But he's still fairly over. The crowd did his like little balling bit and
yeah,
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and he probably gets over with his spots and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, 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 that worked for him. But he finished with a bridge, you know, it's just like little things. You don't see the toes pointing too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had the intermission and then the four-way match, which is what I was really excited about. It was kind of a bucket list thing to see Ray work cause I'd never seen that, but also to see, Phoenix big time and to see Jeff Cobb work, who I'd never seen, against Jonathan Gresham and Sanjay Dutt, which was as it was billed. So this is good. And this match was definitely the match of the night. It was really starting to have great strides and become like build into something awesome with great strength stuff from Cobb, including a double suplex on Gresham and Dutt, but with that was like a stalled suplex. So he wasn't getting help from them on the way up. You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
Really something to see. And Phoenix hit one of his wild acrobatic spots. But then referee Carl Cunningham accidentally hit the three count too early, probably about maybe about 2/3 into the match. I should mention I ran into Jeff Cobb. There wasn't much in the way of merch table before, and I went and introduced myself to him, told him I was a big fan. He was really soft spoken and like told him how much I enjoyed his the main event with Puma from episode 5. And he was kind of seemed humbled by this and said, yeah, that's one of my favorite matches I've ever been in. And then, out of nowhere, a friend of the show, another fellow ECCW wrestler, friend of mine, Randy Myers, who I remember through mutual friends, learned that he was picking Cobb up from the airport in Vancouver, because he's working a date here coming up as well at Wise Pro Wrestling, and introduces my, or I see Randy and shake hands with him, and all of a sudden I don't look like as much of a fanboy in front of Cobb, because this is the guy who picked him up. So that was... cool. But I learned from, like, after I talked to Ravenous Randy Myers, my old friend Randy, I thought, like, so what happened with that match? He's like, yeah, I got cut early. And he said that Jeff had texted him and said he still had 6 more suplexes planned. So I was like, fuck, you know?
You gotta be kidding me. Obviously the whole high finishing stretch probably got cut.
Because it was really just starting to take. I'll still say that was the match of the night, even though the next two guys worked really, or pardon me, the main eventers worked really hard because we still got to see the old timers of El Hijo del Santo and El Santo Jr. and Juventud and Psicosis. But this was about, like, felt like it was taking off to something special, just as the, you know, got killed. So, mind you, 5.5 hour drive, Pete. At this point, I'm kind of thinking, shit. Like, because it was really starting to feel like this is going to make up for everything, this match. And to some extent, it did, because Cobb is really something to see, and Phoenix is awesome. But it, you know, almost got a great match out of the trip, is what I'm saying.
That's rough, man.
Yeah.
I'd be pretty disappointed.
Yeah, yeah. So, as I said, and then that El Hijo del Santo and El Santo Jr. So, this is his first match in a long time, right?
Yeah, he's been banged up, really hurt.
Yeah, but you know what? Everybody could still go, with the exception of, I think, Psicosis kind of dropped to a knee on a. Throw to the ropes kind of thing where he looked a little gassed, but there wasn't quite the suicide tope, but he did a nice little it's El Hijo del Santo's the older one, right?
Yeah,
he did the just kind of nice little jump from the just of the apron off of the apron onto either Psicosis or Juventud. So and that crowd was really warm for them. It was nice to see. So like I said, both men worked hard in the main event and left the crowd happy, which was a good match because there was a post beat down between the two of them on Psicosis and Juventud. So, you know, overall, got to see Ray work, which was on the thing, and those things. But and Conan no-showed too. He was listed. So,
well, he was there.
Are you sure?
There's a picture of him with Farmer and the whole crew.
I don't.
On Twitter.
I don't remember him cutting a promo. Like, maybe I don't know. Like I said, the scorekeeper, like, during this post-match beatdown, the ref, who was the previous ref for some reason, was allowed to come out for this last match, was calling for the bell, and nobody's responding. Like, it was... I go to a lot of shows here in Vancouver. They don't have the hype and hoopla, but at least they feel like, okay, then this happens and bang, bang, bang. It has to be like, you got to do your tech practices and know that guys have entrance music. Like, even like nobody had entrance music. They just have like background music playing for the guys to come out. So
I'm looking at the picture right now.
Yeah.
One ends there.
Okay. Maybe look, maybe I missed, but like that would have been memorable. I know what Conan sounds like, you know, if he would have cut a promo. Or maybe we left that, because we left after, you know, right after that match ended, felt like that was it. That's that. I mean, I've tweeted back and forth with Matt Farmer, and I can tell he's a guy who believes in this product and like wrestling in the Pacific Northwest and stuff.
Was he the one who booked it? Was he the booker?
I don't know.
Did he run it?
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. But I know that he was doing a lot of promotion for it online. Yeah. And
Portland's always been a hard nut for Lucha to, in that area. I mean, I remember not just Portland, but in the Pacific Northwest. But, like, I remember years ago they tried to run a big show with those promos, probably a lot of the same crew. I know Conan and Eddie Guerrero and Love Machine. They had Tanya Harding, and they drew nothing and lost money on the deal. I remember years ago, Meltzer in an article went down to a show, and it was originally they went because Ray was going to be working, and somehow he canceled, and so they got somebody else, and it was just a disaster. And Buddy Rose, this is when Buddy Rose was alive, it was like, he's like, who cares? Everyone's here to see me anyway. This is way past Buddy Rose's prime. Yeah. So it's always been a hard nut for Lucha
to
run in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, we get a lot down here in Texas, and they do pretty good business.
I'm
but
sure.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I got the impression that Yakima is a more Mexican immigrant part of Washington, even like especially with this announcer and like a lot of the Spanish speaking that was going on. There was a bit of a charity that spoke up. And I could tell it was definitely a poorer part of America.
1,000 people in an 8,000 seat building. Mm-hmm. Man, they had it taking a bath on this one.
I'm thinking.
Spray ain't coming cheap nowadays.
I was thinking that. I was trying to kind of do the math. Like, we got the $32 tickets, and there was floor seating that was in the $50 range. So I'm trying to do an average. I'm going to guess they might have got about a $30,000 gate. And, yeah. I don't know. Anyways. Oh, yeah, I just ate terribly, right? Because just the drive up to Yakima, and there are no healthy options in Yakima after 8 o'clock p.m.
Oh, sure.
Anyways, that was that. We will, let's get to why we're here.
Well, what were you most frustrated about? The match getting cut short or all the no-shows?
I'd say that match getting cut short. Okay. Because even then, like, that's who I really wanted, and it felt like, here we go, this is it. We're getting to see these guys do their thing, because I got to see, like I said, I think there's probably like 4 or 5 really great strength spots from Cobb, and, you know, 2 or 3... really cool things from Phoenix, and you could tell, like, here we go. That's a cool thing. You could, there was a lot of kids there, and they would run to the long entry ramp when the guys would come out, but they seemed like smart fans, because you could tell they knew when the finish was coming. You'd see the kids start to run while the match was still going. That was kind of interesting. Little things like that. Oh, other things, like with the bell keeper, like, he rang the bell after 2 of the 4 guys had been announced for the thing, and like little things like that just bug, like, us, right? Like, but
oh, yeah,
if you've watched any,
bug the talent. Oh my
yeah,
god!
Yeah. Anyways, let's. That's that. Let's get into what I thought was actually a pretty good episode of Lucha Underground season 3, episode 6.
Agreed.
Yeah. Totally. We got a recap. Quickly shows PJ Black, Dragon, Azteca Jr., and Chavo. Pentagon Dark, Dragon, Azteca Jr., and Chavo. Then a famous bee in Masquerita Sagrada with Dr. Wagner Jr. Then the Johnny Mundo Dario bit with Jack Evans and Sexy Star. And we see Masquerita Sagrada with Son of Havoc one last time. I'm only mentioning this because I did a middle finger count on this episode. I don't know if you saw, but there were a lot of them. That was number
quite
1.
Quite a few.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you'd noticed this, but in their recaps, they add really nasty sound effects to, like, arm breaks. And,
Yeah,
it works. It's good. At least I think so. So first sequence, mm-hmm. we're in the locker room between... who's it? Dragon Azteca Jr. He's looking at a poster of his father and Chavo's. Would this be legit?
I was thinking it would be. It could be. I'm not mm-hmm. sure, honestly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Chavo's dad. It was Chavo's father.
Okay.
It was the matriarch. Not matriarch, but the patriarch, which was. I mean, this is Chavo Jr. There's Chavito, which was Chavo Classic in the WWE. And then that was their father they were looking at.
Okay.
So it's very possible, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, you know, what, maybe Chavo brought it on down, thought it'd be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if Dragon Azteca was a real character back then. But I don't know.
Also, Chavo wears that poncho that says ULR on the front. Do you know what that stands for?
Not a clue.
Me neither. So he comes in. Yeah, he enters swinging this chair. He says he wants Pentagon, and there's a nice kind of POV shot of the kind of the chairs hitting the camera there to show that Dragon Azteca Jr. I like this kind of when they go kind of stylistic with this stuff.
Yeah, there's totally a Lucha Underground look to it.
Yeah.
I mean, most people, and you know what? It's safer than actually taking chair shots. So
exactly, exactly.
But I thought it was a little overly cheesy.
Yeah,
you know. But you gotta take the cheese with the.
Yep, you got it. Yeah, exactly. Very well said. There's always a healthy dose of cheese in Lucha Underground.
And we got it right off the bat.
Yeah, especially because he passes Ray on the way out, and he comes in to check to him. And it's like, who was it? Was it Pentagon? No, and he knows it. And the great Shawshank shot of him going up, Chavo. I thought that was hilarious.
That puts it over. Yeah, that gave it. That helped. That saved
it. Well said. And then we enter the temple, and thank God, finally a new band. Because that, I don't know if you've been paying it or noticed, it was the Chimps for the first five. Is like this kind of rap 90s new metal kind of shit.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter was like, I thought they used to rotate bands.
That's
out.
Us. That's
and
us.
I was like, hey, now they have another one.
Yeah, that was back. Me. And it was the Joseph actually responded to me on that and told me that it is one for every five. So we get Slapback, who's actually pretty good, like bringing the funk here.
Yeah.
Four more episodes. And that brings us to, I just told Pete about this. Actually, he knows all about it because it's sweeping the nation. Our latest episode of Man in the Wedge. Gotta get that wedge. Okay. So, Pete, last episode, we saw our first a look at a woman we're calling Rainbow Bright. It's a woman in, I'm going to guess maybe she looked like she could be Hawaiian. Max busts my balls for being obsessed with race. I'm just trying to identify people here. As she had a little side ponytail and she was wearing a shirt that said Rainbow Bright. You could see her just to the right of who we will label kind of the new man in the wedge here, which is what I think they try to do. They either get the people to switch spots or they slightly shift their camera angle so it doesn't look like we're seeing the same people every episode. And in this part, we got somebody who did like some really great sideburns and a huge Kentucky waterfall. So I'm going to call him, we'll go Kentucky waterfall sideburns or sideburns, Kentucky waterfall, whatever you like. But because I saw Rainbow Bright there, that's how we know that this is the second night of the tapings. Or we know the man in the wedge is our time code. It is, we've said, our only contribution to wrestling analysis at this time. And sometimes it's terribly confusing and it makes no sense. But so far, it looks like we've seen Rainbow Bright twice, sitting next to her boy, Sideburns, Kentucky Waterfall. Another, wow, that was a hot episode of Man in the Wedge.
There you go.
Leads us to our first match, which is Famous B and Dr. Wagner Jr. with Brenda versus Masquerita Sagrada and Son of Havoc. I loved Masquerita Sagrada and Son of Havoc's entrance on the motorbike with the...
I popped huge. I was like, that is cool, you know? That was like it was smaller type of things. Like, you know, the WWE goes big.
Yeah.
And so I like it when these smaller promotions try to go big, but they can't go big, but they go small.
But this
fit in a grand gesture, and I thought this was really cool. And,
yeah.
And the fact that you have a mini in the side of the motorcycle. Unpolitically correct, I think, too.
Whatever. It suits Son of Havoc. He hails from the open road, and he's a motorist.
I thought it was funny as since he went from Evilise on the back of his motorcycle to now a side, a mini with a side.
These guys are tight. Apparently they're like roommates now, it looks like. Or at least living with...
I saw that in the opening segment. Was that on last week? And I just
It was on a couple weeks ago. I do think you had missed. It's when there was like a Bagel Bites advertisement right in the middle. It was like overt.
Okay, then I totally missed it because I'm like, I've never seen the scene. Okay,
it's worth looking up again because you meet Son of Havoc's mother. Like Masquerita Sagrada calls her Mrs. Havoc, so you know he literally is Son of Havoc. So anyways, they get in there on their Masquerita Sagrada's in the sidecar. He throws up two more metal fingers, which is number 2 and 3 of the night. A fun hot start with the double topes. Good heat early. And an awesome kind of spin around or kind of push off kind of Rana spot from Masquerita Sagrada on the outside there. He's like 52, right?
Yeah, or older. Yeah, that's insane. He's up there. Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah.
There was a great moment after he hit that spot because he just hulks out for like a long time. Do you remember this, Masquerita?
Yes. Yep.
It was like if you could cut in, edit in some shots of him getting hit with a shoe from Famous B, like during that, because he's just like he's getting sorting through some demons at that moment. It felt like some inner demons. It was great. We love Masquerita Sagrada. Our biggest fear was that they were not going to pay off this. Like, his whole shtick with Famous B was just a way to introduce Dr. Wagner Jr. Or, like, Famous, but they bring in the new character, and then Masquerita Sagrada just going to be a footnote. And we're like, fuck, man, this guy's got to get his comeuppance somehow. And he didn't quite get it in this match, but I think they've set it up enough for us to keep teasing it, right?
Yeah.
So Son of Havoc had some solid work, and I thought Masquerade Sagrada added fun. Masquerade Sagrada kicks out of a power bomb. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's so absurd.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the match was a lot of fun. Okay.
Me too.
The fact, though, the whole point of a manager, which is what Famous B is, or agent, or whatever you want to call it, is where his charge loses a match and Masquerita Sagrada gets 5 minutes with Famous B. That should be the payoff. So
sure.
It's weird him working a tag match. So the whole entire structure of the whole entire thing is weird. And should Famous B be scared of a midget? Also, I mean, so the whole dynamic is so so different and off-the-wall crazy.
Yeah.
So what they're doing here, I guess, works because it.
I thought so too.
Every logic, everything in wrestling goes against the grain. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, sure. But but there every once in a while, Lucha Underground does that, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it's a falls on its face, right? But I thought this worked. The pace really picked up with Son of Havoc and Dr. Wagner. I think Son of Havoc's moveset more than many wrestlers out there suits his look. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? He's just got this burly kind of thing, and the way he uses his traps to do that kind of bounce off of the top. Yeah. I've been impressed with him, especially the end of last season and the start of this season.
Yeah, I love his match with Matanza in what
week 1. Yeah.
I thought that was a tremendous big man, a plucky underdog type match.
It's
also weird. Is he doesn't work as Son of Havoc on the indies.
I'm
guessing maybe it's because Lucha Underground owns the rights.
Yeah.
Because he works as Matt Cross.
Matt Cross, yeah.
Yeah. But which, you know, it means nothing. But I like him. He can be a little spotty sometimes.
Sure.
Because he can be reined in. But I think like when he was working with Matanza, I thought that was a really tremendous thing. But I've seen him where he needed to be spotty and it worked good too. And like in like 8-man or 6-man tags,
mm-hmm,
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think that's where his specialty is in the 6-man.
Six-man
system. And
sure,
stuff.
I can see that definitely. Dr. Wagner screws up their shine and hits his finisher, and then tags Famous B so he can do the stethoscope bit. Like I said, yeah, it was a good match for what it was, and it kind of ups a pair of feuds or like this kind of big overall feud. I think we're destined to see a Son of Havoc and Dr. Wagner Jr. match.
Because he screwed last year at the end.
Yep.
That's the other thing that's kind of been bothering me about Lucha Underground. It feels like everything. It's not moving as fast as the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a lot more slow build.
Yeah.
I think it's
because they've committed to 40 episodes, man. And that's I don't care how much of a long term plan you have. That's going to get bloated in parts.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Lost?
Oh, the TV show, yeah, of course.
Do you remember that was that one season when they had like a writer's strike, so they weren't sure if it was going to be a full season, and they had that one.
It might have been season 2 because I thought that was like the worst season.
Yeah, but there was that one episode with that couple Nikki and Paolo who just showed up out of nowhere.
Oh, it came out of nowhere,
and then were never referenced again. And that to me, I think that's kind of what, in a weird way, is what the writers of Lucha Underground have to do. It's like, wow, they've, like, El Rey's given us 40 episodes here. We've probably got about 36 or 30, somewhere in the 30s worth of episodes. So they're going to have to throw in, like, that extra Worldwide Underground versus a Super Friends match was, I thought, completely unnecessary a couple weeks ago, right? So I think we're going to get padding along the way. But I think it will be.
Still flies by, though. You know?
Yeah. And it will be pretty few and far between, but I think we'll know it when it comes. So they go to a commercial, and this is, I like this. I think this is something very distinct to Lucha Underground is that, you know, usually the announcers and the in-temple audience don't know about the backstage vignettes.
Right.
So Matt Stryker is still selling that Dragon Azteca Jr. is having a match with Pentagon coming up. We already know that he's not. And when they come back, He's like hearing, he's right away, he's mentioning rumors of an injury. I don't know. Like, I remember once a while back, Kelly said it's a, you know, our mutual friend Kelly, that it's kind of, it's like a new kind of kayfabe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Utterly weird. And here they're like almost breaking the wall because now they're getting an injury update.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes against everything they've done where they don't know anything they announce.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different, right? And it's at least it's something different. I don't know. Sometimes, again, same thing. That's Lucha Underground in a nutshell. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, like the announcers have no idea there's an undercover cop in there.
Yeah.
Even though all of us at home do.
Yeah. We did see another White Rabbit vignette. With How Long Is Forever was one of the quotes.
Right.
Whatever. Do you... I should mention, we've remained spoiler free for our audience, but some of these are getting out. I assume this is what Ricky Mandel was, the guy who took those three pictures. I assume it's related to those three pictures from a while back, right? And kind of the checkerboard looking mosques. That's a Canadian term for motherfuckers. The three checkerboard looking mosques in it was in like a trailer. Do you remember that? That trailer? I assume that's going to be these kind of White Rabbit guys. But I thought it was going to be Sammy Callahan.
But he came in as a different character.
And he came out as just a skeezy boyfriend. Like a ring rat.
Yeah. Even at least a skeezy boyfriend who wants to be a wrestler.
Yeah. I love, I've always kind of recommended to people who listen to us that This Week in Wrestling, and when you guys do Lucha, it's a good kind of compliment to it. And I love that. I'm usually happy when we. I know that. I'm at least not talking out of my ass when I see eye to eye with some things on you. But we both use the term skeezy without discussing each other to describe Sammy Callahan. So I knew that. Yeah, that's a good way to call him. So we're about at the halfway point here. We'll take a quick break and hear some words from Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's blog, A Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, so we come back, and right away Matt Stryker is telling us that upcoming next week is Puma and Mil Muertes, which should be awesome. Two of maybe the best talents in the company.
And two guys always deliver.
Yeah.
And very rarely, I mean, the only time Puma really doesn't deliver is when they put him in these crazy stips where it's not him.
Yeah.
Like, remember him and Johnny Mundo, they give him an hour or give him the whole show to work a match. That's not their, that's not them. They're not, Mil Muertes, it was Puma and Mil Muertes, right?
Yeah.
Mil Muertes, man, that guy has delivered and delivered and delivered. Yep. I went to an autograph signing with him and what's her name?
Katrina.
Yeah. And I was raving about how awesome his matches have been.
Yeah.
I don't know if he understood me because I think he might speak Spanish. But you're able to stand up there with Dario, which that's pretty damn impressive.
Exactly. And
yeah, thanks, and all this jazz.
And put on great matches again and again and again, yeah.
Yeah, he's like one of the best brawlers in wrestling right now. He has one of the best punches.
Mm-hmm.
He's played, I mean, yeah, the whole gimmick is, you know, Power Stone, but, you know, I still buy into him 110%.
Me too. We do year end of the season awards as we did. He was our MVP, our runaway MVP last year for both of us.
Yeah, I tweeted one time. I go. Mil Muertes is the equivalent to Brock Lesnar on Lucha Underground, but doesn't get paid like Brock.
Especially not.
And Joseph retweeted that.
Yeah, good. Good. Yeah, that's awesome. So right away, our next match for the Gift of the God, Sexy Star versus Jack Evans. Right away, we can tell Jack Evans' jaw is better because he gets on the mic and is shouting on the way down. Sexy Star comes out in what looks like a She-Ra Princess of Power outfit. Pete, your thoughts?
Sexy Star stock has dropped so much.
Really?
Yeah, when I first saw her in season one, I'm like, this is a kind of cool gimmick where she reminds you of one of the Green Lantern enemies in the comic book.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it is because I'm not a hardcore comic book guy, but I'm sure everyone knows. You probably know who I'm talking about. She's dressed in pink.
Yeah.
Star Sapphire.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is a kind of cool gimmick, but they put her against men too much, and it's just...
Yeah.
She's kind of unlikable to me, and... And the fact that in this match it took all these different people to get involved in the match to take out Sexy Star. Overall, I enjoyed what I saw here.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. The more time I can see Aerostar and Phoenix and Drago out there, I'm happy because I really like those guys.
Me too.
I really think they're the backbone of Lucha Underground because they actually come out and just, you know, rip it every time.
Yeah, work their asses off and
do all sorts
of good stuff.
They came to Austin, Lucha Underground, for South By, and they put on a free show, and freaking Aerostar is taking a dive.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that gif. It was insane. Insane.
Nuts, you know, just working their asses off.
Yeah.
So anytime I get to see them here, because like last year it felt like they just totally ignored them for most of the season. And so I'm like, okay, well, they're champs now, so they can't be ignored.
Yeah.
And they haven't had the opportunity to have a tear it up a six-man tag yet.
Not yet, no.
And I'm disappointed about that.
Yeah, I wonder who would you pair them with if they're not stuck with Worldwide Underground.
I like them with the Worldwide.
Oh yeah, me too. But like,
I don't know. I maybe. Me neither. I mean, maybe who is it? The guy, you know, they're going with a kill shot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he can get a group together.
Mm-hmm.
Or the guy who he's teasing as his arch enemy.
Yeah. It'll be A.R. Fox, you know, likely, right?
Yeah, A.R. Fox when he gets there. I think those guys.
That's a good idea.
Tear it up. But, you know, the Worldwide Underground, look, obviously they're heading towards Splitsville.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe when they break up, they can splinter off and bring in some of these other guys and have
makes sense.
And stuff. So.
Makes sense. I will give you my first hot take into response to I've been more and more impressed with Sexy Star as she goes along. I've always liked her fire and her energy, and I think that normally her in-ring work can't keep up with it sometimes. Like when she comes running in to clean house and is throwing those drop kicks and missing with some of them and stuff, and the guys have to kind of help her out. That's when I notice her warts.
Yeah.
And I thought the No Mas match was awesome, but that's all like smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah.
Total. But she like that. She was still.
And I thought that match was a little too violent for watching.
Yeah.
And this comes from a guy who loves watching Ronda Rousey matches.
So yeah.
I mean, it's not that I'm against female violence.
Yeah. No. It was different.
That was pretty gross with the
but
blood.
They, and they, yeah, I know. And they but they went for it, and it had that fucking killer finish where she drops the F-bomb. Like that felt like yes, that worked for her character, and that was really good for her. So Jack Evans gets on the mic here and he says, everyone knows that I'm a fair man, so I'm giving you a fair warning. Something about you don't want the Dragon Slayer to turn into the Star Destroyer. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that
she
was
gives
great.
Him a good slap. He's so much better when he can chirp, hey?
Oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's like anyone can do, not anyone, I can't, but he's just, he's a high spot guy. What makes him different and special is when he's able to get on the mic and cut some freaking funny promos. He can jaw jack with the crowd, with the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought last year, Mil Muertes was the MVP with the ring. But I thought for, like, special attraction or best supporting actor,
sure,
you can easily give it to Jack Evans.
Yeah.
It seemed like, I remember that, I think, I forget what the hell it was.
Aztec Warfare like, 2.
Maybe was that where it was when you see Truman down the stairwell out of nowhere?
Yep, I knew exactly what you were talking about.
It wasn't
about.
Even a shot that they're aiming at. Just stealing scenes, just chewing scenery.
Yeah, exactly.
I like about him, and he could, you know, even if he has a broken leg, he'd come out and, you know, do shtick.
For sure.
He could have money if they went with managers nowadays. I think he could do money as a manager because he's such a good talker.
I think so too. I think so too.
He has a look if you want to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, yeah. But then that's why I thought, like, the only time I thought that his work was not up to his usual level was when he had that one match when he was like all kind of pouty and wasn't talking at all kind of thing, and it just felt silly. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I was surprised they didn't kind of work around that because he worked around it in the match. You could see he was a little guarded. He was still doing some stuff, but I don't know why, if they still had Johnny Mundo to go to and you've got a guy who's got a jaw wired shut.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're not kind of protecting your talent there.
Yeah. We even talked about it a couple weeks back. And mm-hmm. How do you work? I mean, you'd find it hard to breathe.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Because, you know, if you get winded,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're breathing out your nose ain't going to cut it. You want to huff and puff, and
you can
open your mouth and rip all your wiring out. One mistimed punch, one little losing your wind, getting your punch in the stomach, and you get the wind knocked out from under you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's high risk.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice. So anyways, this is where I thought, like, so Sexy Star showing that fire and good chicken shit heel stuff from Jack Evans running and hiding up in the corner. Sexy Star, this is when I was first noticing, I thought her in-ring is kind of catching up to her energy. She's not the wrestler of even somebody that Ivelisse is, but Ivelisse, I was noticing last episode, her in-between stuff, in-between moves, it feels like she kind of drops out of it for a second. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I buy that. Yeah, she's like thinking. Or...
Yeah, and she's not keeping up that, like, she doesn't have to have the fire of Sexy Star. I mean, who does?
You know? Right.
But she needs to just at least keep the crowd on her side, and I think that's what Sexy Star has over somebody like like Ivelisse. There's a hilarious ventriloquist bit with Jack Evans talking in Spanish when he had her in like a, I don't know what it was, a camel clutch or something. Do you remember this? Yeah. That was hilarious.
That was hilarious. Yeah. Jack Evans.
I thought this, look, intergender, especially in Lucha Underground, can be a train wreck. I thought this was a fairly believable match back and forth here.
I thought that over the, how it took everybody in the kitchen scene to beat Sexy Star.
Yeah, I think that's where it kind of got worse. But I mean, before that, when it was just the two of them, it wasn't like, you know, one person carrying the other or one having to do too much to keep things going, which we have seen examples of, right, in the past.
Yeah, and supposedly these guys don't even really particularly care for each other. I think Jack Evans has said some disparaging things about Sexy Star in the press, but you couldn't tell by them working.
Nope. There was a really cool kind of gymnast spot from Jack Evans where he hamstrung across the ring and just ended it with thumbs to the eyes.
I love that.
And she cashed the receipt right after with a little bit of interest of like this kind of triple kind of Bronco Buster off the middle rope there. And a gory special into a nice looking little modification onto the knees. Sexy Star hits or goes up to hit her high spot. And that's when PJ Back shows up and distracts. Mundo hits his spear on the outside. And she kicks out. So this is when I'm guessing this is when you started to... the match started to lose you a bit. More shenanigans and the Super Friends show up. But PJ Black grabs Drago by his that kind of spinal column he's got off the back there. Tail. I have this running theory that if that thing ever falls off, like it just shuts down his central nervous system and he just has to squirm around. But as we saw, Drago entered in wearing that one set of gear, the only gear he ever wears. So that's right?
What are you talking about? That guy has tons of different gear. I've seen him in blue and red, yellow.
Really? All right. Okay. I mean, I've seen as many as you've seen, but I will, again, agree to disagree. Then PJ Black, he kind of takes him out of the ring, and Phoenix shows up for a kind of a bit of a weird distraction. Do you remember this? It's just kind of like, hey.
Yeah.
It just got kind of muddled at the end here, got kind of messed up, but she grabs the kendo and goes low on Jack Evans, which if you think about it was a bit her cashing a receipt from his kind of running anus poke that he did a couple episodes ago, and finishes for the win. I thought, you know, I only drop snowflakes if we get up to 3 stars, and I wouldn't call this a 3-star match, but it was pretty close. I'd almost go
But hey, to each their own.
Yeah, no. I thought I was impressed to see, like I said, you think Sexy Star stock is dropping, but I thought that this was one of the best kind of wrestling matches she's had in terms of like actually doing wrestling moves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think a lot of it was with Jack. I think Jack is really underrated.
Yep.
And then having all the interference and all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, that really hurt it. That hurt it for sure.
Helped a lot. And I mean, helped with some of the storytelling and stuff.
Sure.
And then Arrow started that incredible dive.
Yeah, that's right. They almost missed it in the edit there. He was almost like mid-air when they cut to it. But that's an amazing spot that I don't see anybody else ever really do that other than him.
No, it was awesome.
Yeah. Next, we go into Dario Cueto's office. He's got off the phone on that red phone talking to somebody. We still don't know who it is.
It's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. The red phone.
And have you ever seen that old Batman TV show?
Of course, of course. I'm sure his liquor cabinet's just going to open up and there's going to be a pole down to the cave there.
Exactly.
So Chavo comes in. Talking about Dragon Azteca Jr., and Ray comes in and calls him this piece of shit. That's the first time I've ever heard Ray Mysterio, this, like, lovely, you know, Exactly. Drop a piece of shit. You know, he's probably got some old fans.
He's reverting back to when he was making fun of Lenny and Lodi and saying they were going down the Hershey Highway. references from WCW.
Wow. Yeah. Like, I was going to say, they do mention that how far... Look, Stryker and Vampiro can be awful, and I think they had a couple shitty moments, I think, but for the most part, they were pretty good. Sometimes they can be pretty good, and they were, and I thought when Vampiro was going, the two of them were going back deep into their kind of history, that was good. I liked that.
I agree with that completely, 100%.
Yeah, there was good acting all around in this scene. I think Chavo's turned into a good actor. It's good to see Ray. Dario always ups the performances of everybody who's in a vignette with him. But Ray looked solid here, and Dario makes the kind of three-way match. And kind of hits the...
You got a little fight they had in the office. Which is absolutely hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, in close quarters.
Very close.
Whatever. They throw one of those in every once in a while. Right. It is what it is. So we go to our next match, which we learn is Pentagon Dark versus Chavo Guerrero and Rey Mysterio Jr. Dario comes out after Melissa's introduced Pentagon Dark and tells her to bring her beautiful self over. I don't know if you know, obviously you don't, but I'm a huge Melissa Santos fan. I think she goes above and beyond what any other ring announcer kind of has to ever do. And is basically awesome. a character in the show at times.
Totally care with it. Her and Marty the Moth have that weird chemistry thing going.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if chemistry is the right word, but I know what you're saying.
Have you ever seen her live in person?
I've seen some clips from, I think it was, she was at Bola in 2015, right? And
when I saw her in Austin, I mean, she was flat out gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You don't realize how amazingly gorgeous the girl is until she doesn't come across on the TV. I mean, she looks very pretty on TV, but live, she's another beast.
Yeah, I'm told. I think she looks gorgeous on TV. I just love that she has, and she has a gruff to her voice that you wouldn't expect from such a petite, pretty woman. I think, whatever. I think she's the best in the business. I'll go on. I've said it before.
When we're in Austin, I thought it was the funniest thing. She came out to greet the crowd outside in one color dress.
Yeah.
And when the show started, she was in a different color
dress. She's a star, Pete. She's a star.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, what the hell?
That's funny. So I liked how Dario kind of brought her over and was like talking into her ear at ringside. That really, it's a little thing that really matches his character. Vamp puts us over as the King, the Prince of Darkness, and a Weasel in a match. Right away from the start, we get two more middle fingers from Ray. That's number four and number five. Mysterio does what he does. Still not losing a beat. This is the kind of thing I saw a couple days ago, including going out into the crowd, that wild spot, when he kind of lands and hits those two fist pounds to the two fans. Like, he's just... Yep. He's one of the greatest.
Great shine from him right off the bat, man. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, good. I thought this match had a really good dynamic with Chavo being a bit of a bridesmaid throughout. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It worked for him because, Chavo does what he does. I don't think he's utilitarian. Is that fair to say? Like blue collar? Like... Kelly and I are doing that look through Stampede. That's what Keith Hart, like we've had a hard time trying to nail down what's missing from Keith Hart. He's got like all the execution and stuff, but he just doesn't have any of that, character to
flash.
Yeah, flash. And I think that's Chavo got inherited that gene as well.
Yeah, that's true. He just doesn't pop out at you at all, mm-hmm. Even though his character work has been good.
I think so, too.
And I thought, like, his match with Cage a few weeks ago. That was one of Brian Cage's best matches. Mm-hmm. When it comes to storytelling and selling a limb and stuff. And, but he's been a guy who no one really gives a shit about him. No one cares about his feuds.
No, and his part in this opus is very clearly defined. He's just, and simply defined, he's a coward. That's what he is.
Yeah.
Chavo's a coward. And I think they've just found ways to insert, let's insert him into this, which might have a bit of a more more, you know, shades of gray to it. But we'll just insert this coward into this feud and see how that fucks things up. And sometimes it works. And I think it is working in this bit with Ray here. Pentagon Dark, that great bit with the camera. Sierra Miedo goes back to Rey Mysterio. He sets up the chair on the turnbuckle, but Chavo enters with a drop toe hold. This is what I mean, Chavo would just kind of insert himself when it was
opportunistic.
And this is why I said there was that nice discussion between Stryker and Vamp about their history. So there was a good pace to this match and a logical mix of spots. Chavo tries for the Eddie homage, and I'm wondering about this, as I feel I've noticed this as a trend. Every time Chavo tries, does he only ever get to two in the Three Amigos?
You're probably right. You know, I never really thought about it, but yeah, you're probably right.
That would be a really good touch, because that would be an even, a good homage, kayfabe-wise, you know what I mean? Yeah. This guy doesn't deserve to be giving homages to Eddie, yeah. Right? There's a really hot crowd for this. I thought there was a really good crowd for this whole show.
I totally agree.
Yeah, really hot for this match. Ray hits 619 on Chavo. He had that was good in the Hardy match, just not to go back, but that just kept getting teased. It got teased three or four times until he finally hit it, and the crowd went nuts for it. Pentagon Dark avoided the 619, and Chavo pulled Ray's off the foot of the top rope, so Pentagon Dark hits that package pile driver for the win. So I do believe this is the first time we've seen Ray pinned in Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
And then he hung around to get an extended beat down because he's the man.
Wait, he got pinned into one of his debut, didn't he, against Matanza?
You're right. Of course. How could I forget? He was the only one who gave him a good kind of run for his buddy there.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of in a match, a regular match, this is the first one. Yeah. Which is good because it puts over Pentagon Dark, built up the feud, and the post match especially built up the feud with Chavo and Ray. I went 3.5 on this, Pete.
Yeah, I went 3.5 too. Yeah. I really enjoyed the beginning of it. I thought it got a little clunky towards the middle portion, but then it righted the ship, and I absolutely loved the finish of how Chavo kind of gave Pentagon Jr. the assist again, which was the story all along, was he was picking his spots.
Yeah.
And here he picked his spot, and yeah, he didn't get the win, but he's his opponent, but he still got to beat, but Ray still lost. And so it still keeps, keeps the Chavo Pentagon Dark feud alive. It gives Ray a reason why he wants revenge on Pentagon Dark, where he wants to wrestle him again. So it keeps a lot of fires burning and stuff. And then they still have Dragon Aztec on the sideline wanting revenge on Pentagon Dark. And now I want revenge on Chavo, too. So, overall, I thought everything worked where they needed to go. And you have a lot of interesting programs just springing out, spinning out of this three-way,
For sure. Yeah, and that's a match, or that's an episode that's not padded, you know what I mean? And in terms of this being a wrestling card, we got that fun match and then one in the middle that we, differ a bit on in terms of quality, but I think it did what it had to do.
But for me, as a show, I liked it because it was different. It was different than the other two matches. So I have no problem. I might not particularly like the match in a bubble, watching. Think of it by itself, but as part of the total show, I have no problem with it because it was totally different than anything else on the show. It got us, it also led to some more stuff, and so I felt for what they were trying to do, which is cause more friction with Mundo's group.
Yeah,
it was effective in that way.
For sure. Yeah, they got over storylines, which is
for
a show that is, perhaps more than others, more than any other, just married to their storylines because they've mapped it all out, the 40 episodes, then that's what you got to do. And that's what they should be excelling at because they have the freedom to, kind of take this time with it, right?
Yeah, it's not all about match quality. It's about
the
story they're telling. And this is episodic television,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And and for that it worked, you know.
I agree.
Do I want to watch it by itself? No. But as part of the episode where it's telling the story of where all these characters are going, I thought it was effective.
Yeah. Cool. I did want to kind of get into that before we sign off here. And do you think, we were asking the other day, is this a show that could ever go into syndication?
Ooh. I don't see why not.
Right? If it got, I think the magic number is 5 seasons.
Yeah.
And then it's just like actors. I know this as an actor because that's like you want to get on a show that reaches syndication because then all of a sudden you don't have to work anymore because you're getting these constant checks, right? But then there's different things in terms of, as we've learned with, what's his face, Bagwell's suit against WWE and like some other wrestlers about how they're being used. And clearly there are different, you know, laws or lack thereof in place that, you know, kind of rewards talent for this sort of thing. But I don't, like, that would just be, even if it's just in terms of exposure, that would probably be, I wonder if that's on the radar of these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I, to me, though, I think the show is tailor-made for Netflix, because I think it's binge-watching more than but syndication would work. But they need to get to 5 seasons. But I've never, you know, but has a wrestling show ever been really syndicated in a way?
I don't think so.
You know, in reruns, you know?
Yeah.
I guess you could say World Class on ESPN, when they were, the Legends of World Class were showing old World Class footage on ESPN the afternoon. This is when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was like in like 1988 or might have been 91, and they're showing footage from 84, and it was episodic. But I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
The way the wrestling fan is nowadays, they don't want old content.
It's true.
You know, obviously, because they're not. And I'm a fan of old wrestling. And obviously, by what we've seen on the network, they're not putting, you know, a lot of old content up there.
Not a ton, no.
They're rather putting new content, so I don't know if it would work with syndication.
Yeah.
If the WWE is you know, then again, they're not pushing their old school library. No. So
I think just what Lucha Underground would have going for it is the benefit of it just being its own little self-contained universe. I don't know. Just something to think about. And the other thing I was going to mention is, and this is what we've listened to. Like, I don't know if you know or not, but there are a ton of Lucha Underground podcasts. Like, Joseph did, or one of the, Eric Van Morgenheim or something, like another one of the producers did a Q&A with one of the guys there, and just talking about how, you know, even though they don't get, like, whatever the ratings, and they're really weird stats, right, of them all, like, the average age is, like, in the 50s, like, 56. Like, how can this be possible?
Like, totally not what they're aiming at.
But that, like, and that's got, that can't be entirely accurate, because that would mean there's, like, guys in their 70s, if 56 is the middle. I just think that, I do you get the El Rey Network?
Yeah, well, no, I don't have cable, but I get a thing called, I'm using a Roku.
Yeah.
And I buy this thing called Sling, which has the El Rey Network on it. So I do get the El Rey Network.
Yeah.
I just don't have cable.
Yeah, I know how Roku, but does that count towards ratings?
I would have no idea.
Yeah, I would guess not. I would guess not.
Because it's not affiliated with the cable at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Sling, where it has like 20 stations, and I pay, I think it's $9.99 a month, and one of the stations is El Rey. I mean, I have El Rey, the three ESPNs, El Rey, TNT, TBS.
And maybe it does. I don't know. Yeah. That's cool. I like that you can pick and choose like that. Everybody is cord cutting. The main reason I keep cable is for live sports.
Yeah.
But anyways, like in looking at all these, you know, variety of podcasts and responses, I think you and Timothy have picked a good kind of sweet spot where you get it. Like, I think there's either like people who just gush about, like, they could do no wrong. There's never a discouraging word for Lucha Underground, which, I mean, come on. But and then there's like the old average, I don't want to say average, but like a more kind of traditional wrestling guy who was, you know, upset at like the fantasy elements, and like sometimes it just come off as like bitter and grouchy that it, you know, that they're having to apply these old kind of logics, and I think that's super erroneous. I guess what I'm getting at is, I mean, we try to find a good middle ground by acknowledging the absurdity of the program, and that being a huge selling point is the absurdity, because, you know, deep down, professional wrestling is kind of absurd, I've always thought, and that's, and so why not go further with it?
Lucha Underground reminds me a lot of, I mean, it's not nearly the same, but it reminds me a lot of old school 1980s WWF TV in a way, where there's all these absurd characters. Mm-hmm. The gimmicks, a lot of gimmicks are over the top. Some of the angles can be over the top. I mean, it's different, but I think a lot of people, like where you talk about the median being the average of being 50, I think it's something that reminds them a lot of their wrestling. And like, for example, One Man Gang, former WWF superstar, Mid-South, big-time star.
Yeah.
He loves watching Lucha Underground.
That's great.
But the wrestling isn't anything like what he was doing.
Sure.
But I think he understands the angles, and he understands the kind of the cartoony nature, which that's where I'm getting at on the old WWF.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I can see that. You know? I can see that. Yeah, it's just it's an interesting little phenomenon, in that they do have their dedicated followers, and.
Used this as like Matanza. He's just he's a modern day Chasing the Terrible character.
Or, very good. Nice little Stampede shout out. Yeah. I appreciate it. He totally is. Awesome. Only he's, like I said, Jeff Cobb. Have you seen him live yet?
I have not. And I'm hoping. I have tickets to the Rumble this year.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's going to work in the Evolve show when I'm in San Antonio for the Rumble. If not, I'm hoping to see him maybe at another Evolve show, because I'm going to Mania again this year in Orlando. So I'm hoping to see him live eventually. Yeah.
Or you might even, you went to South by Southwest show.
Yeah,
right?
He just wasn't with the company yet.
Yeah. But, maybe when is that?
I don't know, honestly.
That seemed like that was a big success, and they'd probably have them back. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
There's rumors going around Lucha Underground is doing a couple tours
in
a few weeks, but it's so secret, no one knows about it. Really. And I always thought of the Observer.
Yeah, I was reading that, too.
In Houston, and so I might go down if they do one for Houston.
Cool.
I'd go down for it, but it all depends, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. It seems like they are, it does sound like season four is a go, but nobody's really been informed of dates, and even with those dates that they had kind of thrown things out, none of the talent have been told to book them off. And
I thought they missed the boat at Mania last year, not having a running show.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I know you and, like I said, you and Tim had talked a bit about how it seemed like they might have lost their way, but it does seem like they definitely are on the right track here in terms of moving storylines along and, you know, keeping our interest.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's it, Pete. Do you have anything you want to plug?
You hear me on Titans of Wrestling, which, like, I... We either record weekly or yearly.
Yeah. But it's always great.
We're supposed to record one this Saturday, so we'll see.
Yeah.
And then This Week in Wrestling, follow me at Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. I got to vote. This is my first year. I got to vote in the Observer Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
So I turned my ballot in. So
cool.
I thought that was pretty cool to do that.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about that on This Week in Wrestling?
Yeah, I'll probably talk with Timothy, because it's just so not up Johnny's alley.
What do you think Johnny would think of Lucha After or Lucha Underground? Have you talked to him about it at all?
He's never watched it because he doesn't have cable.
Yeah,
refuses to watch stuff pirated. So that kind of takes everything.
That limits a lot. Try watching anything in Canada, man. That's that would definitely limit your.
Whoever would have thought Johnny Sorrow has ethics?
Yeah.
Which would be beyond Yeah, he's probably the most ethical. Oh, Kelly's pretty fucking ethical. Yeah. out of the four of us.
Awesome. I know. I loved your guys' bit on that last Battle of Atlanta. I told Kelly that, you know, your show. I get the idea that your show was put together for when things like that happen, when you know, really cool footage that, you know, there's nobody else who, you know, that you're the first people I thought of when, in terms of giving a match review of you for, and it was, yeah, that was a really, really good one for sure.
Thanks.
No problem. We mentioned it briefly. Kelly and I did, History of the Stampede Territory, episode 5. Have you gotten to see any of that footage that was removed from the network?
I watched a little bit of it and then got, removed. Yeah. Kelly sent a link. I just haven't rewatched it. I've seen the only thing I've always been disappointed about Stampede footage is everything's so clipped.
Yep. And I get that. But if you, again, it's kind of the same thing where you kind of have to watch it like a show and what it gets across through a show. And once, if you can get past that, I think a lot of this stuff stands up, man. Big Daddy Ritter has been a revelation. That's Junkyard Dog, right?
Yeah. Even back then.
Oh, my God. He was working
as a heel.
A great heel. He has, I know we had mentioned that you would love this match where he just opens up this Irish baby face right at the start and then just keeps working the cut for the whole match. That I know you love when guys work the cut. So
oh,
think,
yeah. It's wrestling 101. Yeah. I'm not as bad as my buddy Will, who was yelling at a Ring of Honor show about the guy that doesn't know how to work because he's not working the cut. I'm like, they don't do it, man. They're on TV. They're not working the cut, man. He's pissed up and by mistake. They're doing everything away from the cut.
Yeah, no kidding. It's worse. Like I said, that Stampede footage is from all four episodes we watched. There is a full match between Mr. Wrestling and Dynamite Kid that is really unique and really cool to see. It's when Dynamite's first kind of embracing that kind of soccer hooligan heel that would work for him later, and a manager named John Foley who is,
I love John Foley,
knocks
I'm
it up.
Dynamite Kid footage, and Foley was a great, great heel who totally changed it because in reality he was a real shooter.
Oh yeah,
but he's playing kind of the fool in the manager role.
Yeah, he's and everything every time he's on screen he just knocks it out of the park. And we know that Ed Whalen has his reputation for drives people nuts, but we're seeing when he's doing business with a heel in the ring, those little segments are tremendous. I know people have their issues with Whalen, and like Kelly and I, obviously we don't get it because we grew up with the guy. He's like our, uncle. Like, cause he did all the Calgary Flames games too. He was just part of the community, right? So we're trying to figure out what people's issue is with him, and so far we're coming up short. I got to be honest.
One of my things was and it's more of his behind the scenes stuff. Like he would actually edit some of the footage.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I had problems with that.
Yeah.
I mean, when when the Bulldogs broke up. He was trying to ignore that the feud was happening.
Yeah, and that's later. Like, but look, man, like he's with them forever. And it like we watched that one from 1961, that one that's the only one that exists, and then until you get up to the 70s again. And the entire structure is in place there, and he's he was even if it like I know what you're saying about him later in the 80s, kind of he was getting pissed off with wrestling and like grossed out by it and hated the violence. So I think he would start to no sell a bit more, but back then when it was a little more pure, he was really helping with, move the storylines along.
Brett puts him over huge, but Brett's also part insane.
Yep. But, did you see his recent,
rant, and then now, well, at least he's apologizing.
Yeah, I love that. I was like, I now understand that I'm come off as a bitter and angry old man. This is not the case. I'm like, oh well, let's see how things go from here.
Yeah, I know. I wonder who talked to him, because someone had it sensitive to him. I wonder which one who respected enough to talk to him about.
Good question. Good question. I don't, like, yeah. All of these guys, like...
I doubt he came to this this conclusion on his own.
Who knows? No. And these, it doesn't help that, like, you know, even when these guys get further away from thing, if they, depending on when they had their glory days, there's always some sycophants hanging around, you know, that don't make things much better. Anyways, wow, Pete, this is awesome. We talked for about an hour and 15 minutes here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Max will be back next week. Until then, the only question is, will you join us?